Hello again, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Flashback Fridays on Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele, and I'm flying solo for this one again. Anna's still under the weather and will be back soon. This is the 14th episode in a long line of them that will span over this course of several months as we analyze, critique, and dissect each and every Marvel film in chronological order. Last week, we did Doctor Strange, and this week, we're going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Just a friendly reminder, if you like what you're hearing, you can follow us wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Just search Real Talks. That's R-E-E-L Talks. Just like my name, S-T-E-E-L-E. Also, you can follow us on social media. I'm on Twitter at WannabeRounder and on Instagram at DKadudo. Just a couple of quick announcements. Our revamped Patreon channel is now live. You can find it by typing Real Talks into the search bar. Let me tell you a little about it. We're offering four different affordable levels you can support us at. $3, $7, $15, and our highest is only $20 a month. If you do choose to support us, you'll have the opportunity to get some great perks, such as earning your name shouted out before every podcast, cool merch, and if you're one of our major contributors, you'll get a one-hour monthly Zoom meeting with Alyssa and myself, not to mention one unpublished podcast. For more details, just head on over to the website. I'll leave the link in the description. So without any further ado, let's dive into the movie. So, this week, as I said, we are going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, the follow-up to the smash 2014 hit Guardians of the Galaxy. So once again, this was made by Marvel Studios, distributed by Walt Disney Studios. This movie came out in 2017. Actually, it was the first week of 2017, May. By this time, Disney had taken over, had done the merger, and so Marvel had been under their umbrella for, a couple of years now. So, yeah. First week of May of 2017, and by this time, too, Marvel had really established themselves as a perennial summer blockbuster studio. Every single May, you can look forward to a new Marvel movie coming out. And this all started back in 2012, 5 years earlier, with the Avengers. And if you go back and you look up until that point, they basically dominated, so it was a big, big deal. This was actually written and directed by the incomparable James Gunn, who did the first Guardians of the Galaxy, which was a huge hit. So he had put himself on the map. So the budget of this movie was a whopping $200 million. This was no secret that, they had some of the best effects behind them in ILM and Disney. So, the visual effects were amazing. Opening weekend, it made almost its full budget back, $146.5 million. So, it was unbelievable. I mean, obviously, the success of the first film really drove the opening weekend for this. It didn't have anything going up against it. So, that's why it basically crushed the competition back then. It went on to gross almost $390 million domestically and $474 million overseas, bringing into a total of $863.7 million. Just a huge film, and it was just an incredible, incredible take. So this was the 11th highest grossing weekend for Marvel up until that point. I mean, we have several films which we have yet to do, obviously, that made more money, but up until this point, it was the 11th highest grossing film, just behind Captain Marvel, which, by the way, made over $1 billion, which we'll be doing a little later on, at $153 million. And the 28th all-time highest grossing opening weekend, just behind Furious 7. And of course, Furious 7 is one of those franchises that they can do whatever they want. You know, I think the next one, they're going into space. But in all seriousness, it had a huge opening weekend. So all the main cast was back. We had Chris Pratt coming back to star as Star-Lord. We had Zoe Saldana coming back to play Gamora. We had Vin Diesel coming back as the voice of Groot. We had Bradley Cooper to play the incomparable Raccoon. We had Karen Gillian coming back to play Nebula. Michael Rooker was reprising his role as Yondu. Sly Stallone actually got in the mix here for a small portion of it as Staker Osgood. Staker Osgood. And Kurt Russell was the other big name they had to play in this film. And he had a huge part. So this film starts on planet Earth in the state of Missouri in 1980. Meredith Quill is the son or the mother of Peter at this point, is riding in a car listening to tunes on the radio with her boyfriend, Kurt Russell, whom she calls Spaceman. They go behind a Dairy Queen and run into the woods, where the man shows Meredith a small alien seedling where he says it will eventually be all over the place. He then kisses Meredith. So we fast forward 34 years later. The Guardians of the Galaxy, Peter, Gamora, Rocket, and Drax, and we got Baby Groot. Because if you remember at the end of the first Guardians of the Galaxy, he actually sacrificed himself to save everybody. So that's why he's a little baby. So they're standing on a platform as they try to secure these batteries from their latest employers, the Sovereigns. The Guardians have their weapons ready and they're here to battle an interdimensional beast. And so it descends, leading the Guardians into spring into action, except for Groot, who's jamming out to Mr. Blue Sky on a speaker that Rocket set up, while all others are trying to annihilate the monster. So Baby Groot's having that little dance, which was really, really cute. It seems like any baby anything, you know, whether it's Baby Yoda or Baby Groot or whatever it is, it's always, you know, the cutest thing in the world. They always manage to do that. Drax ends up falling on the speaker to Groot's dismay. So since I can't harm the beast from the outside, Drax tries to get to kill it from the inside by allowing it to swallow. So kind of like the scene right out of Men in Black, where he's like, eat me, eat me. So he basically had the this thing eat him. So Star-Lord notices a cut on the monster's neck and orders Rocket to get it to look up. Gamora then slices it downwards, killing it, letting Drax spill out of the hole. So the Guardians bring back the batteries to the Sovereigns and meet with the High Priestess, Ayesha. In exchange for the batteries, the Sovereigns deliver Gamora's sister, Nebula, to the Guardians so they can take her to Xandar and collect the bounty on her. Before they leave, Ayesha talks down to the Guardians. But Peter, in particular, noting his half-human, half-alien heritage, giving him something she deems reckless. The Guardians leave, and Rocket's swiping some of the batteries for himself. So he took a couple of extra things, five-finger discount there. So on the way to the planet Xandar, the Guardians are suddenly met by a fleet of Sovereign drones, all going after him for the stolen batteries. The others figure out that it was Rocket that took them, and they're pretty pissed off at this point. The drones start attacking him, and Rocket steers the Milano, the name of the ship, toward a wormhole that will lead them to another planet. In the distance, another craft passes by and starts to destroy the Sovereign drones. A man appears to stand on his ship and wave to the Guardians. The Guardians escape the drones, but crash on a nearby planet. So as the Guardians observe the wreckage of their ship, the other ship that saved him descends, stepping out his Ego, who reveals himself to be Peter's father, with him and his empathetic assistant, Mantis. So we finally get to see who Peter's father is, and that was Ego, Kurt Russell. Pretty good in this role. I mean, he's, you know, at this point in his career, he can do whatever he wants. I mean, he's played like a major Fed guy in The Fast and the Furious. He's done this. He's done other things. He's fun. You know, he had his good times. So, on another planet, Yondu, if you remember from the first Guardians, Yondu was Peter's buddy. And his team of Ravagers have fallen on hard times. He's staying in a nearby hotel where Howard the Duck is also in attendance. And anybody who remembers the first Guardians of the Galaxy with the cutscene had Howard the Duck in it. So they always, one thing Marvel loves to do is callbacks. We talked about it a couple weeks ago on the Civil War podcast, is the way that they're able to use a callback. So remember in Winter Soldier, when Cap pulls Bucky out of the water. And then in Civil War, Bucky ends up pulling Cap out. So they always seem to come around full circle with what they do. So Yondu spots his old comrade, Stalker, played by the aforementioned Sylvester Stallone, who's exiled Yondu from the Ravager team for child trafficking. Okay, I can see why. Among the Ravagers is Taserface, who thinks the Ravagers need a new leader. So another one of the Ravagers, who has since also come to question Yondu's leadership. So after Yondu finishes talking to Steiger, the Sovereigns arrive, and Aisha approaches Yondu with a proposal. Peter's still in shock to be meeting his father. So Ego explains to him that he sent Yondu to pick up Peter after his mother died. Peter still doesn't understand why Ego left Meredith in the first place. He invites Peter and his friends to his planet, which Peter is hesitant about until Gamora convinces him to join his father. So Peter, Gamora, and Drax go with Ego and Mantis, while Rocket and Groot stay behind to fix the Milano and keep an eye on Nebula. On Ego's ship, the three talk to Mantis, who shows off her powers by seeing into their minds. She lets everyone know that Peter has sexual feelings for Gamora, which Drax finds hilarious. It's still one of the funniest scenes in that movie. It's, you know, they always seem to do the comedy in just the right way. So, yeah, that was pretty funny. The Ravagers come across the woods where the Guardians crash-landed. Most of them end up walking into traps laid out by Rocket until Yondu shows up with his arrow. That's which he can control by his whistling. The Ravagers get Rocket and Groot, but when Taserface plans to get Peter, Yondu isn't quite as willing to turn him over, because, don't forget, they were friends. Nebula then breaks the crest on Yondu's head to knock him out. She aligns himself with the Ravagers as they take Rocket, Groot, and Yondu prisoner. So Ego brings everyone back to their planet that literally lives through him, as Ego is a Celestial. Now, anybody that has seen Eternals, and we'll get to this in a couple of months, so the Celestials are a major portion of Eternals. So his conscience is the core of the planet. He explains to the three that he came up with a human form to travel the galaxy, and he came to Earth and fell in love with Meredith, his mom, but could not see her so often because it would take up a lot of his energy. Peter continues to hold hostile feelings for Ego, for leaving Meredith alone to die. As Peter grows more emotional, his hands produce powerful energy that is linked to Ego's own power. Ego shows him how to control him and use him. So, and this is the reason why, too, if you remember back from the first Guardians, because anybody who held an Infinity Stone would essentially die. So when Peter, you know, comes out and he grabs the Infinity Stone, yes, it was killing him, but, you know, you had all four and they came together and they were able to beat the villain in that movie. So, Ronan. So, moving back to this one, on the Ravager ship, Taserface and his goons start ejecting those that are still loyal to Yondu, except for Kragan, who only watches in disbelief as his friends are killed. When Taserface boasts of his greatness and fearful name, Rocket only mocks him. Nebula enters and suggests that the Ravagers turn into captives to the Kree for the bounties on their head. She also makes other demands, including a new hand. Craig brings her to the ship that she uses to get the Ravager ship to get going to find more. So Mantis and Drax form a bond, and this is the funny scene later on where, well, I'll tell it to you guys. So Mantis and Drax form a bond. Through Drax continues to remind Mantis that he finds her hideous. But he That is a good thing because he thinks he is hideous as well and still manages to find someone that loved him for who he is. And this is another great thing that Marvel does. They're able to take something like this, and if you can actually apply this to your own life, if you don't think you're that good looking and, oh, I'm never going to find somebody, there is somebody out there that may find you attractive. So it's a good way of actually putting little life lessons in there. So Mantis says that she needs to stay to tell Drax something important, but Gamora interrupts things and Mantis keeps quiet, instead just taking the two to their rooms. The Ravagers throw Rocket and Yondu into a cell, and while they take Groot for their own entertainment, Yondu mentions how he was Kree Battle, a Kree Battle slave before Stagar pulled him out and made him a Ravager. When Rocket asks why Yondu kept Peter around, he insists it's because Peter was small enough to fit in spaces that the others couldn't. Then the two work together to break out. They get Groot to come by, and Yondu tells him to get a prototype fin for his head. After bringing a bunch of the wrong items, Yondu gets his fin and gets himself and Rocket out. Yondu sends the arrow through every Ravager they come across, which Rocket and Groot get into some Ravager ass-kicking themselves. The three board an escape ship with Kree, but not before Yondu sets up the whole ship to blow up. Taserface gets hit with flames, but he manages to notify Yaisha to Yondu's whereabouts before he goes down with the ship. The other four must go through 700 jumps to get to Ego's planet. Back on Ego's planet, Peter tries to woo Gamora with his dance moves. Of course, we all think of Footloose, with Peter, and that is the one movie that he loves and is another callback time and time and time again is Footloose. But it doesn't quite work, as she can't bring herself to express her own attraction to him. After she leaves, Gamora then sees Nebula coming down on her ship, shooting at Gamora. As Nebula crash lands, she jumps out to start fighting Gamora. Nebula manages to overpower Gamora, but reveals that she never wanted to prove that she was better than her, just that she wanted to have a real sister. Gamora's success as a warrior led to their father Thanos mutilating Gamora, leading to her resentment of Gamora. The two then form a sort of alliance that they come across a cavern filled with about 100 skeletons. So Peter and Ego continue to bond. Ego then tells Peter that as long as there's light on the planet, Peter will retain his powers, as well as his immortality. This is a big thing. Like, he could actually be immortal if he stays here, just like his father. That's something that a lot of people would just take and, keep. Mantis sees that Ego has Peter wrapped around his finger now that he knows about his powers. She rushes to wake up Drax to warn him that Ego's true intentions are now clear. So at this point, Rocket, Groot, Yondu, and Kree make it to their destination. Rocket starts to gloat that he wanted to save Peter just to prove that he's better than him and can hang it over his head. But Yondu shuts Rocket up by stating how scared Rocket really is and how he puts the tough guy thing as a facade. I mean, how many times have we, as people, said, oh yeah, I can do this, no problem. And then inside you're like, I don't know. So whether it's to try and impress somebody or whatever. Then they set off to take on Ego. So Ego explains to Peter that he wants to make what's called the expansion. He went around the galaxy to thousands of other worlds to plant the seedlings to grow his power all over the galaxy and cover the plants an extension of himself. He impregnated women from these worlds and produced as many children that Yondu delivered to him. But when they did not possess the same power as the Celestial, Ego had them killed. So you can obviously see what kind of evil person this guy is. And now their bones, and that was the bones of the 100 people. There you go. And now their bones are what Gamora and Nebula found. Peter just so happens to hold the power that Ego was looking for. Eagle also reveals that he put the tumor that killed Meredith in his head. Oh, boy. So if anybody remembers or has seen the Guardians of the Galaxy, in the first 5 minutes, we see a young Peter basically holding his mother's hand because she's extremely ill because she has brain cancer. And now we find out that Ego is the one that put the tumor there. And of course, so this is when, when she dies, he runs outside. Of course, Peter gets abducted by aliens, which, Yondu takes him in, and he becomes a Ravager. And now we see that why she died. So, yeah, he's got to be really ticked off at this point. So, at that point, Eagle also reveals that the tumor he placed in Meredith killed her so she wouldn't feel any pain from being apart from her. Peter snaps out of it and begins to unload his guns on Ego and Fury. In response, Ego takes Peter and controls him to start spraying the seedlings across the planet, causing mass destruction. To top it off, Ego crushes Peter's Walkman and awesome mix volume number 2 that his mother left him. So, there's a lot of callbacks here from Guardians. So anybody that has seen Guardians knows exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen Guardians, so his mother actually made a mixtape, which was the soundtrack of the first film. And on his birthday, before she died, she actually gave him the tape and it said, "Awesome Mix Volume 2. And that is the soundtrack of this. And of course, it gets crushed as they're having this battle. So Rocket, Groot, and Yondu meet up with Gamora, Drax, and Nebula, and Mantis to try and stop Ego. Unfortunately, they're also met by a fleet of Sovereigns out to kill them as well. Peter fights Ego's human form, but his entire plan itself fights back. Mantis is able to put Ego to sleep while the Guardians take care of the others. They fight back against the Sovereigns and eventually destroy the whole fleet with a bunch of lasers. Meanwhile, Rocket builds a bomb with the batteries that he stole. One of the absolute funniest scenes of this movie, and audio cannot describe how funny this is. So I'll read it to you and then I'll tell you about it. So, meanwhile, Rocket builds a bomb using the batteries he stole. When Groot takes and runs off with it, despite Rocket warning him not to press the wrong button or else they'll die. So, there's a scene where, and it's, don't forget, it's baby Groot at this point. So, he says, "Okay, which button are you going to push?" And he points to the death button. He's like, no, that's not it. Now, tell me, what are you going to do? So he basically goes through it. "I am Groot. I am Groot. Okay. I am Groot. And then which button are you going to push?" "No, you're going to kill us all." So Rocket yells up, "Does anybody have any tape?" So Peter then, they're up in the battle. "Does anybody have any tape?" "No? Okay." Because he wants to put tape over the death button. So meanwhile, baby Groot decides, "Oh, I'm just going to run off with it." And Rocket says, "We're all going to die." Absolutely hilarious. So at that point, he does that. And Mantis gets knocked out by a fireball, breaking her hold on Ego and reawakening him. As the others try to get safety, Ego begins to consume them. Peter then continues fighting his father using his celestial powers. Now freed, Groot then finds Ego's brain in the planet's core, and he sets the bomb to go off in 5 minutes. Drax carries Mantis to the ship while Gamora and Nebula make it back. Rocket gives his last spacesuit to Yondu, knowing he cannot save him and Peter. Gamora tries to go back, but Rocket stops her so he doesn't have to lose another friend. Ego pleads with Peter to stop the bomb, or else Peter will just be a normal human. Peter sees nothing wrong with that and lets the bomb go off. Ego's human form disintegrates, and the rest of the planet starts to explode. Yondu flies back and grabs Peter. As they leave the planet's atmosphere, Yondu puts a suit on Peter instead. He then tells Peter that while Ego was his father, he was never his daddy. Yondu starts to freeze up, and Peter sadly watches them die. So, one of the other things that Marvel is very good at is emotion and how they use it. We see in this one scene that basically we're seeing a selfless act by somebody, and we're also seeing loss. And so it's just really, really well done. You can't say enough about how they're able to mix humor and loss and emotion and comedy and all of these things. So the Guardians prepare to give Yondu a proper Ravager funeral. Krager gives Peter a zoo. He gives him something to make up for his lost Walkman, which Yondu has been meaning to give him for a while. In return, Peter gives Krayland Yondu's arrow, feeling that Yondu would want them to take it. Nebula sets off to hunt Thanos down herself, but not before reconciling with Gamora. Mantis decides to stay with the Guardians. And this is that scene at the end of the first trailer of Infinity War, where the last shot is, you know, Thor. He's like, who the hell are you guys? And you see Mantis in the background, and they're all waving. So now she's with them. So as Yondu's body goes out into space, the Guardians see dozens of other Ravager ships arriving to pay their respects to Yondu. So that's the movie. So Stallone didn't have a big part. It was more of a cameo type of thing. But still, Sly Stallone playing in a Marvel movie really says something, right? At this point, they're getting anybody they want. And this has been continuing and will continue for many, many more movies. So there is a lot of end credit scenes here. So basically, Kraglin tries to practice using the arrow. He doesn't quite get the hang of it, and he ends up sticking up Drax with it. So Stagar honors Yondu's sacrifice by forming his own team. And so he gets a couple of, Miley Cyrus. Not a joke. Miley Cyrus actually was in this as a cameo. That is the ultimate cameo right there. So Aisha and another Sovereign discuss a new plan to take down the Guardians. We see Aisha sitting by a birthing pod, waiting to break out whatever is inside to use it against the Guardians. She decides to call it Adam, aka Adam Warlock, which is going to lead into Guardians 3, which is coming out next year. So that's going to be fascinating to see how that whole thing plays out. Groot is now a teenager. Peter scolds him for leaving his roots around. But Groot is just mocking him and plays video games. You know, usual teenage stuff, right? And the final one is the elderly Stan Lee in his cameo is sitting with the Watchers discussing his previous adventures, but they become bored with him and leave him. So those are the cutscenes. So a couple of things to note here. Number one, we do have Guardians coming out at the next year sometime. So that's going to be a critical thing to see how that whole thing plays out. And so at that point, this is going to be the last film for Dave Bautista. So Drax is no longer going to be in this film. So this is going to get released in 2023, May 5th, actually. So we're talking about almost 6 years later, almost to the day the first Guardians came out. Still reeling from the loss of Gamora, Peter Quill rallies his team to defend the universe and one of their own, a mission that could mean the end of the Guardians if not successful. So that is the plot, according to IMDb. That will also be written and directed by James Gunn. So we know that We don't know who the villain is, but we do know, well, we do know who the villain is. I shouldn't say that. We know that Adam is going to be the villain because of the ending credits scene. So we Cosmo's going to be back. We're going to have Starkid. We've got a couple of other little things. So, and yeah, this is going to be another big movie. Not much you can say. I mean, I think a lot of people are looking forward to the holiday special. I know I am. But yeah, it's this is going to be in phase five, and it's going to be a fun movie. I don't think it's going to be as good as the Guardians, the original. It's just so hard. When you make sequels, it is so difficult to top the original. It really is. Because the expectation is there. Everybody wants to make, we all hope it is, but more times than not. I mean, and I've said it before on the podcasts of, talking about other movies. There is only maybe seven or eight films that I can think of off the top of my head that are better than the original. Empire Strikes Back, better than Star Wars, even though that's difficult to believe. It just, everything about it. The twist is essentially the big one. You have the Winter Soldier being better than the first Avenger of Captain America. While Civil War was good, it wasn't as good as Winter Soldier. The Godfather 2, I think, even though The Godfather was an absolute classic and is in the top five of AFI, American Film Institute, I still think The Godfather 2 was superior. The Dark Knight, it was the movie of the 2000s. So that just tells you something. I mean, Batman Begins came out in 1999. So, or 2000, I think. But it was just an amazing movie. So, whether Heath Ledger was going to be alive or not, it was an amazing movie. And I would put Top Gun Maverick in that conversation, too. I think that even 35 years later, that movie is better than the original. And all you got to do is look at the box office. $1.2, $1.3 billion. And just crossed or will cross number seven or number eight domestic all time. Just behind Jurassic World right now. So you cannot discount that. So what I'm getting at is the long and short of it is sequels are very hard. Very hard. And everybody has expectations for it. So, anyways, on that note, coming up. So next week we have, so Anne will be back next week, and we're going to be taking on Spider-Man Homecoming. And that is just a major thing because this is going to be the first time we see Spider-Man, which of course is an IP of Sony. We're going to see Spider-Man involved in And he's going to get his own standalone movie. I mean, we saw him in Civil War for about, 10 minutes. But now we're getting the first standalone movie for him. So that's going to be good. Every single one of them made $1 billion. John Watts is, which, and that's a whole other interesting thing in itself because he directs three $1 billion films. In Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Far From Home, and Spider-Man No Way Home, he's set and slated to do Fantastic Four and then bows out. So you gotta wonder what happened there. What was the cause of that? So very interesting. But yeah, so we got Spider-Man Homecoming. And then that's going to be next week. And I believe the week after that is Black Panther. I mean, that. So, like I said, these next 2 or 3 weeks, they're all bangers. And then the week after that, we've got Avengers Infinity War. And then we have Black Widow. And no, I'm sorry, Black Widow comes later on. So the next 2 or 3 weeks are this. We've got Spider-Man Homecoming. We've got Black Panther. And then we're going to have Infinity War. So those are going to be the next 3 weeks. Great, great movies. All billion-dollar movies. Yeah. And this just shows you, like I said, this stretch here for like the next 4 or 5 weeks are just amazing. Once we get past Endgame, it starts to die down a little, but not much. So, yeah, I actually want to send a thank you to all the guys and gals that are actually listening, because this is a journey. This is a journey that's, I mean, we're doing it over several months, but this whole thing's been over several years. And this is the 14th episode in this, the 14th episode. And we are about halfway there. We're about halfway there. And, this is like hitting the mid point of the race. So we got another half to go. But it's going to get better. It's going to get better. And like I said, the next 3 weeks are going to be amazing. So, yeah. So, okay. That's it. And I'm David Steele. And once again, thank you very much for listening. And this has been Flashback Friday.